This is Grapple, and I'm Naomi Starobin. Immigration. It's a hot-button topic in our country right now.
We're in the middle of a crisis on our southern border. The unprecedented surge of illegal migrants from Central America.
No man, no wall.
As I've said repeatedly to the country, we are going to get the bad ones out, the criminals and the drug deals and gangs and gang members and cartel leaders.
Philadelphia's largest Cinco de Mayo event won't happen this year. Organizers are canceling the Carnaval de Puebla parade and celebration because of fear brought on by a federal immigration crackdown.
So on the show today, we're going to hear a range of personal stories that speak to some of the intense and passionate feelings around immigration. Our first story takes us to Hazleton. It's a small city in northeastern Pennsylvania, not too far from Wilkes-Barre and Scranton. As you might know, Hazleton made headlines back in 2006 when it passed an ordinance called the Illegal Immigration Relief Act. The ordinance was pitched as a response to crime going up, and it set out to crack down on local companies that hired undocumented workers and landlords who rented to them. Here's Congressman Lou Barletta, who was mayor of Hazleton at the time.
My small city had become a victim of a national problem. I was losing control of my city. Hazleton faced a series of serious crimes committed by illegal aliens. Enough was enough. I had to act. I introduced the Illegal Immigration Relief Act. There was no blueprint for what we were doing. There was no manual. Others around the country would soon follow, but Hazleton led the way. Then the lawsuits came, and they told us to quit, but we didn't. With the support of the people in Hazleton, the people of northeastern Pennsylvania, and the hardworking, legal American citizens around the country, we kept going.
But the ordinance never took effect. It was challenged by the ACLU in court and was found to be unconstitutional. Just a decade later, Latinos are now the majority in Hazleton, and they're helping revive this Rust Belt city. Empty storefronts are now Latino-owned businesses and restaurants. There are more people walking around downtown, and schools are expanding to accommodate an influx of younger people. But not everyone is happy about some of the changes. Our reporter, Eleanor Klibanoff, spoke with two longtime residents hanging out at the American Legion.
The bar behind the American Legion Hall in downtown Hazleton is smoky, dark, and crowded, even at 1:30 on a Thursday afternoon. The crowd is all white, mostly older working-class men who have known each other for decades. A lot of people there don't want to talk about the influx of Latino immigrants. It's not a big issue to them. But Jim Reagan had something to say about how much his hometown has changed.
It used to be nice back in the 70s. You used to be able to leave your doors open. There was drugs, but there wasn't drugs. Not like there is today. It's just bad area. The Spanish people took it over, and the way it is now, it's unbelievable. You can't leave your doors open at night. You can't relax on your porch if you live in the city. Unless your yard is fenced in and you block their noise out, you can't do it. They ruined it. And now there's more of them than there is of us.
As Reagan was telling me this, his friend Francis Hinckley joined us. Both of these guys are in their mid-50s and have lived in Hazleton their whole lives. They used to work together, painting houses, but Hinckley had to let Reagan go as the client base faded away.
The ones that had money that you worked for 30 years, they either passed away or they moved out of town. So who's going to hire us? They only hire their own.
I worked with him, been friends with him over 30 years, him and his brother, and I just started in a plant 4 years ago because I had to, because the work isn't there. I worked the cold storage out in Humboldt. Ice cream, butter, fish. What they've been doing, they come in and they do the work. They might do it cheaper, but the quality isn't there. And because of that, and because there's so many more of them, like you said, the contractors that have been here for 30 years don't get the work because they won't hire them. They'll hire Hispanics.
Over the last decade or so, Reagan has seen a huge change in the city. And he says it's not for the better.
But now, but what's happened now over the last couple of years is what all the drugs that are here in Hazleton, with the it's mostly heroin. Crack, it was a year ago, now it's heroin. Everybody, it don't matter what color you are. The heroin ruined everybody. But who's bringing the drugs in? It wasn't like this until the Spanish people started coming in the neighborhood. They bring it in from everywhere. And anything you see on the news is always the names, Rodriguez, Hernandez, whatever it might be. They're the ones that are getting arrested for bringing this stuff in. And they're the ones that are selling it in town. Shootings, everything like that. You never heard that. Never. It's just ridiculous. It's ruined. This area is ruined by that.
Hazleton is located between New York and Philly and along major highways. It's become a popular source city for heroin dealers. And it's been tough for the city's bare-bone police force to keep up with the drug problem, the crime problem, and some of the Latino gangs. But when you look around the country, Hazleton isn't the only city facing these problems. Still, Reagan says he's done with Hazleton. Nothing's keeping him here. His kids are grown, and they moved away.
Oh, it's whatever it's going to be. I'm not going to be around that long, hopefully. I'm not going to be living here that long, let's put it that way. I've lived here all my life. I want to get out of here. The only places now is down the valley area. Where I want to go to, the people in that area that have lived there all their lives only rent to certain people. So I know it's a safe place. So once there's a place open, I'm going to go there. I won't have to put up with none of this shit. None of the people. I'll be able to sit on my porch without having to listen to anything, any kind of bullshit.
But for his friend, Francis Hinckley, the decision is harder.
My wife walks a block to work. We walk across the street to church. And my mother-in-law lives a couple minutes away. My mom lives a couple minutes away. It's pretty hard to pick up and go.
To help us trace how Hazleton has changed over the years and what's behind the tension between longtime residents and immigrants, we're going to turn now to a sociologist named Jamie Longazel, who grew up in Hazleton, and he's now teaching at the University of Dayton in Ohio. He's written a book about his hometown. And we'll also hear from a Spanish-language newspaper publisher named Almacar Arroyo.
I love this area. It's my home. I have a two daughters, a grandson. I married a lady born and raised in this area.
Almacar Arroyo has lived in Hazleton since 1989. He was born and educated in Lima, Peru, and worked at a bank there. But he lost his job after Peru slipped into an economic crisis. So at age 40, Arroyo left for the United States. One of his first jobs was in Florida, packing tomatoes, which is what brought him to Hazleton in the first place.
I had to start from scratch, and I came prepared to do any kind of jobs. I cleaned bathrooms, I washed dishes.
As Arroyo settled into Hazleton, Jamie Longazel was growing up there.
It was always a working class kind of town. My father worked in one of the local factories, as many, many people in Hazleton have for the last several decades since the coal mining industry went under. It's always really been struggling economically, but at the same time, it's kind of a hard scrabble town or a town with a rugged, resilient kind of attitude. So I lived in Hazleton until 2001, and coincidentally, that's right around the time when Latino immigration picked up. For example, at the time of the 2000 census, the city was 95% white. And then, 10 years later, those numbers were in the high 30%, 40% even. There was, a handful of Latino students in my graduating class. There was not the presence of Latino-owned businesses downtown that we see today.
And many of the jobs that Latinos are doing today in and around Hazleton stem from a local initiative going all the way back to the 1950s, as Longazel explains here.
So what happens in Hazleton is this group gets together, led by local elites, the president of the Chamber of Commerce and others, and they create an organization known as CANDU. And CANDU was going to raise funds to purchase land on which they would develop an industrial park. they got a lot of people from the community involved. They placed these little lunch pails around town in restaurants and other public places and encouraged people to put a dime every week into one of these lunch pails as a donation that would be used to attract industry and eventually jobs, hence the symbolism of the lunch pail. It was a really unique and interesting story, but it's also what was happening around the country at that time. In the 50s and 60s and into the 70s, we saw what folks refer to as the first wave of community economic development. By the 1980s, this approach, it sort of fell flat because of the bigger political economic circumstances. The Reagan administration came in and started cutting funding for community economic development projects. And so what these organizations like Can Do realized is that it was going to get really competitive. You needed to really incentivize. You needed to offer some tax breaks or offer something that was attractive enough to the business that would be locating. And in time, they realized that it's just so difficult, so competitive, that they use this state-level tax incentive called Keystone Opportunity Zone Initiative. And the Keystone Opportunity Zone Initiative gives companies a moratorium on all taxes for a dozen years in some cases. And these KOZs, as they call them, they worked. They attracted industry to the Hazleton area, except the problem is they weren't attracting the manufacturing jobs that, you know, offer long-term employment and benefits and safe working conditions and that sort of thing. Instead, they were bringing in companies that tended to offer lower wages, sometimes dangerous conditions, temporary jobs, things like meatpacking plants and distribution centers and warehouses. And so right around the time of the late 90s, early 2000s, we see the shift from manufacturing into this sort of temporary type of employment. Again, manufacturing is still around. The Luzerne County, where Hazleton is located, lost more than half of its manufacturing jobs since 1980 as evidence of that. And this is what helped to attract immigrants into Hazleton, in contrast to the story that local officials told, which made it sound like the city was being invaded by undocumented immigrants. The reality is that this is an economic story where immigrants began coming because these were jobs. They were available jobs, and Hazleton had a low cost of living, and the circumstances for many were an improvement. And so that's what happened.
And as many more Latinos moved into the area, Arroyo started to publish a Spanish-language newspaper.
I'm still in business, and I'm happy with the readership. The demographics in this area is definitely changing. The Latino population is majority in the Hazleton city. Very affordable cost of living in this area. There are jobs. And most of the Latinos that came here are from Dominican Republic, and they moved from New York, New Jersey, or directly from Dominican Republic. So Hazleton right now is over 15,000 Latino people. The census 2000 counts 1,100 Latino. Census 2010, 10,000. And probably for the census 2020, over 20,000 Latino people will be living in Hazleton.
But a decade ago, few people would have anticipated this kind of growth. Longazel takes us back to what happened in 2006.
What happened was there's a murder of a white Hazleton resident that was allegedly committed by two undocumented Latino men who, importantly, were never actually convicted of this crime. But the murder happened, and then-Mayor Lou Barletta, now Representative Barletta, created this response, this reaction to this murder that suggested that immigrants were the source of Hazleton's struggles. And so it started out with the murder, and then it became this story about undocumented immigrants committing crime in the city and causing all of these problems. And then it became a story about undocumented folks draining resources and on and on. And The reality is that city resources are drained, that they are struggling financially. It's not because of undocumented immigrants. It's because of other things. For instance, the massive tax breaks that some of the biggest employers are receiving. But, you know, it resonates because of that. As the city moves further and further into poverty, we're seeing increases in crime, and it becomes easy to rely on these stereotypes of immigrants as crime prone in order to kind of explain what's going on, even though that's not the reality. And so I think that it was, you know, this economic pattern was happening and immigrants were coming in and people were feeling, you know, squeezed, and native born folks were feeling squeezed kind of in a double sense, where they had decent paying jobs starting to vanish and then new folks starting to arrive in the community. And so the introduction of this narrative, of this story that it's undocumented immigrants who are here to harm us, really caught on in that context.
Well, it was an attempt to lock illegal immigrants out of one Pennsylvania town, but a new court ruling is saying not so fast. The law in the city of Hazleton sought to penalize businesses who had decided that they were going to hire undocumented immigrants, also landlords who were agreeing that they would rent to undocumented immigrants. Well, it's been a tough tactic that now the courts have declared is not legal.
Arroyo remembers in 2006 protesting the proposed ordinance and the impact it had.
I remember in front of the city hall there is a street, Church Street. That was the division of the city. In one side, the side of the city hall, we were the Latinos standing there on the steps of the city hall. And on the other side were the people that support the ordinance with signs that say, immigrants don't belong here, you are illegal, you go back to your country, illegals are criminals. And on the other side, most of those people, including me, Hispanics, that was the division, the start of the division. The entire family left Hazleton, most of those families from Mexico and Central American countries. Businesses that were established here, they closed the doors. It was a nightmare. The aggression, not physical, but verbally aggression on the street, it was horrible. Discrimination.
Even though Hazleton's ordinance never took effect, Longazel still sees its powerful narrative playing out today, as if retooled into a sort of nostalgia for the Rust Belt.
It really struck me. I remember watching 60 Minutes on TV, I think it was late in 2006, and they had a special on Hazleton, and there was this image of the mayor being paraded down the street and people shouting, keep the illegals out, and those sorts of things. And I just marveled at that. Like, what happened here? You know, where did this come from? So I started doing my research on Hazleton, and as I did that, it started to spiral into this national thing where laws across the country were being passed. And then Donald Trump emerges on the scene and, you know, starts using this similar rhetoric and talking about building walls and being really appealing to people in Rust Belt states who are going through this deindustrialization process. And so it was just really striking to me, I guess, to think of Hazleton as so central to all of this.
The next part of our show takes us to Philadelphia, where the city's thriving restaurant industry has provided jobs for some immigrants working without papers. And just for context, the Pew Hispanic Center estimated that back in 2008, nationwide, about 20% of the country's 2.6 million chefs, head cooks, and cooks were undocumented. But as we're about to hear from our reporter, Annette John Hall, it's not always such a great gig. Annette spoke with two undocumented Mexican chefs in Philly, who feel stuck. They've been unsuccessful so far in getting citizenship, and they've gone years without seeing their loved ones back in Mexico. They're too afraid to leave, and they're worried that they'd be deported when they come back to the United States.
We're going to start with the story of this undocumented chef who asked us not to use his name.
I do have a good life, but my life over here, and I think like another immigrants like me, we live in a free country, but your freedom as an immigrant is not take you too far. I think we live like in a little golden cage, which It is nice and beautiful, but you see on the cage.
And so, for the last 17 years, this chef has lived his life under the radar, without papers.
I do not drive, because to me that will be like expose myself even more. I use my bicycle every day. I go to work, do my thing, and I go home.
Wanting more opportunity for his family, he left his loved ones in Mexico City, took a bus to a checkpoint, and made a grueling 3-day trek to the United States. He and others walked across the desert, hiding to avoid immigration agents, and then walked some more before crossing the border illegally into Arizona.
You had to walk in the middle of the night, and it's really dark, and you cannot see anything. You just like walk, follow the group, and you don't see where you're going, what is in front of you. You just go. And you just grab like a gallon of water, which in the beginning is really heavy, and eventually it's getting heavy and then lighter because you run out of water, and you just wait. From there, we got to the other side in Arizona, and from there, we went to another state I don't remember, and we took the airplane into Philadelphia.
And only once did he go back to Mexico.
You said when you went back in 2004, how did you come back? Did you come back the same way you came the first time, like through, you know, at night and walking the desert and all of that?
Yes. Like you said, the first time that was kind of easy, but the second time definitely that wasn't easy. I almost see a man die in the desert, and as a human being you can just let another human just die there, and I give my water to him and try to push him to keep going. And I think that was the more scary part, crossing the desert with a bunch of people, and you don't know if you're going to make it to the other side. That's why I don't go back and forth, because I don't want to leave that. It's not good. It's scary.
Over the years, he's tried twice with different lawyers to become a citizen. But with President Donald Trump now in office, he's backed off trying to become a citizen because he thinks he'll be deported if he starts the process.
With this administration now, I don't think we're going to be able to do that anymore, to come back at all. And to try to get a resident here, it is it's almost impossible. First of all, you had to get a lawyer, which is going to cost you a lot of money. And if you dishwasher or cook or carpenter or whatever, you probably not going to have enough money to do that. And that's something. One. Two, you pay your fine, and then they send you back. But now you need to come in the right way, but because administration and all that stuff is gonna, it's not gonna take it like 2 weeks, years and years. My hope still is be here in this country, and also one day go back to my own country, visit my family, my daughters, and still be able to come back over here to go back and forth. I don't know when it's going to happen, if one day it will happen or not. It's a mystery for me.
While he's been in the U.S., he's missed the funerals of 2 brothers, a sister-in-law, and 2 nephews. A whole generation of his family has grown up without him there.
I got 2 daughters, and when I left, they were 2 years old in a year, and I went back in 2004. I saw them for 2 months, and I come back again. So it's been many years without seeing them. One of my daughters, she's a mother now, and that was tough. My other daughter, she's in the school, and it's just, I just miss the whole entire childhood, me not being father and be for them when they need me.
Do you send money home?
Yes. First of all, I try to give like good education to my daughters and good life over there. and also to just helping my parents. Sometimes for good stuff, sometimes it's just to send the money for funerals, and it's just tough. Being here for 17 years, I met good people. So in that way, I still have like people who support me. They know who I am, and they support me 100%. And they're like my second family in different country.
And two of his friends are Christina Martinez and Ben Miller. They're married, and they own Barbacoa Restaurant in South Philadelphia. They become outspoken activists around immigration. Not only do they employ workers without papers, but Martinez herself came into the country illegally.
Sí, pues somos indocumentados. No tenemos papeles para trabajar.
She said, yes, we're undocumented. We don't have papers to work. This is the system that keeps people in limbo that are here working, you know, providing for the economy. And so it's an intentional limbo. It's a made-up limbo. My lawyer told me, you just have to wait for the law to change. Nothing I can do. She's barred for 10 years. She's going to be undocumented. No way to change the status here.
Martinez is barred from applying for U.S. citizenship for 10 years because of unauthorized entry. She first crossed the border illegally in 2006 and was sent back. Then she came back again in 2009 to find work to help pay for her daughter's nursing school tuition. And since then, she hasn't seen her family.
Todo una vida.
Christina said that she misses them terribly.
De ver a una mamá que es aquí y a un padre que no tienen, que miran a Ben como una familia, este restaurante es como una familia que yo no tengo y que tampoco los que migran tienen.
But she tries to be a mother for the immigrants that come to eat here, and some kind of way we're a family to with our customers.
Their restaurant is small but bright and airy. There are sounds of music and conversations in Spanish and English. And on the walls, there's artwork by Puerto Rican artists. In the kitchen, an employee makes homemade tortillas from cornmeal, which she flattens into a tortilla press and puts on the grill. Miller chops the barbacoa, steamed lamb, that is served up for tacos and reminds some of their Mexican customers of home. The food at Barbacoa is so good, it made Bon Appetit's 2016 list of best new restaurants. And with this kind of exposure, Miller and Martinez have felt compelled to be vocal about immigration. But they know their lives can change at any moment.
Well, we looked at the worst case scenario, which would be that, you know, everything that we have built here would be closed, and we will, you know, Christina will be sent out of the country, and we know that we can cook good food and make business and live with integrity and live with peace and contentment wherever we are in the world.
And that wraps up our show. Be sure to check out some of our photos of the people and places you heard on the show. You can find the photos online at keystonecrossroads.org/grapple. Next time on Grapple, we'll hear about public school funding in the northwestern Pennsylvania city of Erie, where community members are grappling with what to do about the cash-strapped school district. Grapple is produced by Keystone Crossroads in association with Covenda Media. Support for Keystone Crossroads comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The music on our show is composed by Tony Trove and Mike Vivas. Special thanks to our reporters, Eleanor Klibanoff and Annette John Hall, WHYY's Bob Alls for engineering our show, and Charlie Kyer for his help post-production. Our executive producer is Stephanie Marudis of Covenda Media. And I'm Naomi Sterobin, editor of Keystone Crossroads. Thanks for listening.